is Leo Costa Jr. from BigBeyondBelief.com. I'm very excited about doing this podcast today, and I'm going to be doing it with a well-respected gentleman who has a major presence in the industry. His name is Jerry Ward. Jerry, how the hell are you?
Leo, thank you so much for having me on, man. It's an honor to be on here. I've been a fan of yours, and of course, I've been using the Optimum Training System principles since I got the books back in the 90s, so I'm super psyched to be here, man.
Yeah, me too, man. You know, how long ago was it that we did this? I did your programs a few years ago.
Yeah, it was. I think it was last year or the year before we did it. Yeah, we did the YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, we're starting up a podcast. I'm starting to go back out in the industry and see what kind of how many fish that we can stir up again. And so I thought nobody better to do it with than you. And, you know, Jerry, the thing about that is, you know, one of the things that I'm pretty amazed about now, and if you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
43.
And I'm 64. And, you know, when you get to my age, it's kind of strange, I have to tell you. And a couple of things that really amaze me still is that, you know, when I first got into this business, I was willing to, I loved it so much. Almost 40 years ago, I remember thinking I would do this for free if I didn't have to pay bills. And the, you know, and the crazy thing about it now is I still have that feeling, Jerry. And you know something? I really, you know, it means more to me now than ever. I mean, and of course, I've been in this thing so long now that in a lot of times I'm kind of like the oldest guy in the room now. But you know, it's been a hell of a ride. And what I really respect about you, and the reason why I wanted to do this is because I've watched you and followed you, is that I think in a way we're kind of the one and the same, in that we say things like it is. We talk straight. I know that in my business, we talk right from the beginning in our training courses, we were kind of counter-popular because we talk so straight. And I see you doing the same thing, and I respect that. I admire that. And that's one of the reasons why I want to be on this show today with you, the first one out.
I appreciate that, man. I think, honestly, we come from a different time. Things were just different back then. And I think that, you know, when I came up, of course, Optimum Training Systems had, you had Big Beyond Belief, and you had, you know, all the different Bulgarian Burst Training Systems and Titan Training and stuff like that. And it was so different, but the thing was, it worked. And I think that because it was different back then, I think that's why a lot of people kind of were not so sure of it until people started trying it.
Yeah.
You know, and then it kind of puts you on the spot because you were telling the truth the whole time, just telling it how it was. And because other people go out there and scam people, it kind of makes them look at us and be like, well, are they telling the truth? But The thing is, as long as you stay true to who you are and do your thing, I think you can't lose.
And I think you're exactly right. The thing I wanted to ask you is how and why, because I kind of told you, like, you know, about getting into the sport. I got into sport because I – you know, when I was an athlete in college, I had a couple of chances to go at least try out at a pro level in baseball. And I let that go, Jerry. You know, at that time, I was burnt out, and I just gave myself a way out. And it really pissed me off, and I never forgave myself for that. And I promised myself if I ever got another shot at doing something that where I had a lot of love for and passion, that I was going to do it without question. And, you know, years later, I'm on a dairy, a family dairy, you know, I wasn't where I wanted to be. And, you know, I had a buddy of mine who came in one day. He saw me after so many years. He goes, what the hell happened to you? He goes, you're out of shape. And why don't you do something? You know, that really woke me up. And I got into the weight room, and the rest is history, you know, so to speak. So I'm curious to know with you, how and why did you get into bodybuilding? Or was that the first thing that you got into?
No, I was an athlete when I was younger. I played baseball, soccer. My baseball team won the championships. My soccer team won the championships. I played football in high school. I wrestled in high school. But it wasn't until I was about 15 years old. I think I was 14. I really started getting serious at 15. But I got in a lot of trouble at school. Nothing big, but just mischievous stuff. And I went to school with a few of my cousins. So I had actually gotten suspended from school, which I got in detention. I didn't show up. They told me, give me 2 days. I didn't show up. So I got called to the principal's office and told them I'm basically not going to detention. So he said, you'll have in-school suspension. I said, I'm not going to that. He said, well, we're going to have to suspend you. I said, well, just do it. Let's just cut to the chase and suspend me. And he just laughed. And my vice principal was like, you know what? Even back then when I was a kid, he said, at least you're honest and you're going straight to it and not make us go through a whole song and dance. So I figured I was going to have the day off. And at that morning, I didn't get out of bed because I didn't go to school. And I got a knock on the door, and it was my cousin Chris. He was a couple years older than me. I'm not sure why he was out of school. But he said, get up. We're going down to the basement. All of his weights were in my basement. He had an incline bench that was adjustable. We had two different flat benches. We had extension, leg extension connection thing with the leg curls on the bench themselves. We had two railroad ties that we used to rest the bar on to do squats. You pick the bar up, the railroad ties would fall down. Yeah. We had a chin-up bar. We had easy curl bars. I mean, it was a whole setup. And we just looked at the Weider posters on the wall that he had put up, and he made me start going through some circuits, and I pumped up really fast. And I was like, wow. And then he was like, wait a minute, this is supposed to be a punishment. Yeah. And I was like, really enjoying it, but I was really enjoying the arm training because my arms pumped up really fast. And by the end of the day that I was training there for 5 or 6 hours with him, he just kept pushing me. And the more he pushed, the more I enjoyed it. And I'd never done anything like that before. And when I was done, I took the dumbbells upstairs and put them under my bed. So before school, I do curls before school. When I got home, I would do them before I went to bed. So I was doing these multi-frequency workouts, not even knowing what I was doing, and I was responding. And then what happened was all of a sudden people at school started to notice. You know, it was like, oh, his arms are a little bigger, and I was wearing tighter t-shirts and stuff. And then, I stayed in the basement for, a little while. And then when I first went to my first gym, that's when I saw the bodybuilding culture. I didn't know really anything about it until I saw those guys that were walking around at 250 plus. And I was like, who are those guys? How did they get like that? You know, and that's where it kind of started from there.
Yeah. And, it was kind of something similar with me because, I played football, and the position that I played in, we were not back, believe it or not, back in the 70s like that, 76, the guys that played the specialty positions, they were not to be in the gym in those days. It's hard to believe. It was just mainly for the right. linemen, And, in fact, they'd make us run extra wind sprints if they found the receivers, quarterbacks, anybody like that in there, believe it or not, years later. But right. So when I started doing this, much the same as you, I didn't know what the hell I was doing, And I went and got muscle mags, and I started seeing these guys, I started looking at the equipment. I was on the dairy. I knew how to weld. And how I got started was I went out on the dairy, and I started welding, brought stuff to my house in the garage. I welded my own, it was like prehistoric bench. I mean, it was just very rudimentary, But it worked. It got me going. And I'd go in that damn garage not knowing what the hell I was doing, just reading. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, 6 months. I'm like, I kind of like what's going on here, So that was the progression. And then I went to my first gym. I'd never been to a gym before, a health club. And this is where I met my partner, Russ Horine. I started this whole thing way back when, And he was the instructor. And what he told me, Jerry, because he saw me working out and how hard I was working out, he came up to me and said, you should compete in a bodybuilding show. When he told me that, I thought to myself, he's out of his freaking mind. I mean, I was dropping classes in high school, in college, if I had to get in front of a class to do a, presentation, let alone get up in front of a stage, like that. And long story short, I followed his advice, and Jerry, the rest was history, man. I got that buzz, that passion. And like you, all of a sudden people started asking me questions at the gym, and the damn light goes on. I mean, the lights don't go on too much with me, but when they do, they're pretty bright. So I thought, hey, maybe I can do this for a living. And mind you, at the time, there wasn't one person in my area. But you know what, Jerry? Here's what I learned about that. When you want to do something enough, there's an old saying, but it's so damn true. When you have that passion, you'll figure out the rest of the shit, And it did. It turned out that day that my buddy told me to go and compete. That day when I competed, it was over. I knew it was over. I went to my dad. In my culture, Portuguese, we're supposed to take over the dairy. I'm the next generation. And so I go up to him and my wife. I said, I'm not going to do this anymore. What are you going to do? Personal training. They all about fell out of their chair, But Jerry, since that day, I've never really worked a day in my life. It's been that good for me,
Funny to say that because I'm actually Portuguese too. I grew up in a predominantly Portuguese area in Rhode Island. There we go. And it was basically, my parents weren't even really about going to college. They were about getting a good job.
Exactly.
Like just get a job and just try to do your best, And when I told them about the training, at the time back then, I think it was 1993 when I graduated, the average trainer was making about $38,000 a year.
Yeah.
And when I told them that, and they said an 18-year-old kid making $38,000 a year, then they were like, okay. Yeah. They got behind it at that point because – they were like, you can go through school and stuff and it would take you 5-6 years more years to be able to do that. If you could do it now, go do it now. But I have the same thing. Like they just wanted you to do what they knew and not, this was something so foreign to them that they were kind of not against it, but they didn't really understand it in the beginning.
Yeah. And the thing about that is this is really funny. And I look back now and I'm almost thinking, man, I must have been out of my mind to go and do this because I had people asking me back then. They said, personal trainer, are you an aerobic instructor? And I said, no, it'll be, it was that, you know, in 1982, it was just really different here. You couldn't find a trainer maybe 45, 60 miles away, Bakersfield and Fresno, but not in Visalia, you know? And anyway, so it was just like, there was so much urgency and so much passion that, you know, somehow it just kind of worked out, you know? And I don't know. But let me ask you this. So once you, you know, what was kind of the progression for you? So you started lifting weights and started, so what was next then for you?
So I went to this gym called Rhode Island Hard Bodies, which was like a little gym. It was all rusty. It was very much like the Metroflex now. And it was a hardcore gym, you know, and back then it was, you know, everybody's still wearing the towel tops and the string tank tops. It was, you know, most gyms were hardcore that were in my area. There weren't really many fitness places yet. There was Bally's that was starting to take off. But when I switched to Gold's Gym in Somerset, Massachusetts, I met Al Thurston. And Al, he ran that gym, but there were posters on the wall that said, if you're looking to compete at this competition, see Al for details. So I sought out Al. I was about 135 pounds, you know, 17-year-old kid. And I found Al. He looked like the Gold's Gym guy. He was jacked. He had a bald head. I was like, wow, it's the guy off the T-shirt.
Yeah.
And, you know, I told him, I said, I want to compete. He just kind of looked at me like, are you crazy? Like, but it was a natural league called ANBC, the American Natural Bodybuilding Conference. So the guys weren't really big to begin with, but that gym had a bunch of natural bodybuilders. And I mean, they were all training there and stuff. So I kind of understood what came along with it. And I was like, well, I just need to kind of, this, if I want to do this, I need to make this commitment. And I did. I committed to it. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And Al took me in his office and he ran something called the Gold's Gym Nutrition Analysis at the time. And printed me out a diet, gave me a workout. And he would actually kind of come in the gym and watch. Like as I was, you know, weeks went by, he was watching to see if I was doing it. And when he would see me doing it, he'd walk up and be like, okay, adjust your form a little bit like this. Like he started showing more interest in me and the other people that were competing that were kind of under his wing. And I stepped on stage, got my butt handed to me, and could not have had a better time in my entire life. I was so excited to be a bodybuilder, shaved my body, put the tan on. Everybody thought I was nuts. And, like, I was still a senior in high school.
Yeah.
It was crazy, but that was it. You know what I mean? Then I started buying Muscle Fitness and Flex, and then, like, that's where I got to get to, you know? And then the first guy I saw was Achim Albrecht, the big guy from Germany.
I remember him.
I was like, that's where I want to be. Because I didn't know anything about the size. I kind of knew about Arnold and stuff. It wasn't a lot that I knew. Like, I didn't know who Mr. Olympia was or anything at the time. And once I saw that picture of Akin, that's when I really started diving into it. Because I was like, I had never seen anything like that. And they were just starting to usher in that new era of the mass monsters. And I was like, well, this is for me. This is what I want to do. And that was it. That was one show after another. And I just kept competing year after year after year and just trying to get better every year.
Yeah, you know, the thing about that and what it sounds like with you, it happened to me too. It's like after that show, you know, and then like I did, and the next show, it's like the bug bit me so hard, and it was almost scary because it not only did that, it, you know, the mindset that came along with that, because as you know, in order to be able to keep going up the ranks and getting better, it's not, no one's a, everybody's a hard gainer, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it never was easy. It was always about doing the work, you know. And I remember working out locally, and I did but the first time I went to Gold's Gym, and I have to tell you a quick story. I stopped off, you've been to Gold's, I assume, in Venice?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, so back then when I was looking for Gold's, I stopped off at Lincoln Boulevard, and there was a gym that was just off of off the freeway there. And I walked in, and, you know, I don't know shit. I said, hey, do you know where Gold's Gym is? The guy that helped me said, no, I have no idea where it is. Turns out it was Joe Gold. This is when he was really ornery, you know. And I worked out at his place, and then later on found out that that was Joe Gold that told you that, you know. I said, he's a rascal, you know. But when I went into Gold's Gym, I have to tell you, I felt pretty good about myself, you know. And I walked in there, and I saw how big those guys were. And to be honest with you, the first, my first sense and expression and thought when I saw those guys, I go, oh, hell no, there's no way. Where I'm at and where they're at, there's no way, you know. But it didn't scare me off. You know, once I saw that, then I knew, like, kind of like what you thought. I thought, okay, there's the measure right there for me. That's right. What I want to do, you know. And of course, it was just about putting that amount of time and meeting the right kind of people along the way. You know, one of the guys that I met that really changed my life, a few of them, was, did you ever meet Vince Gerona?
No, I didn't. He passed away before I got to meet him.
Yeah, the Iron Guru. And I was fortunate enough, I went to watch an Arnold classic. And do you remember Bob Green? He used to write for one of the magazines.
Yes.
This is yep. going back a ways, you know. And Bob was on that flight coming back, and I realized that he was living at the time above Vince's gym. And I wanted to meet Vince. I mean, he was like the Iron Guru, for crying's sake, you know. And he said, I can set that up. And anyway, I went down there, and I have to tell you something, Jerry, it was so weird. When I went down there, he met me outside of the gym. He said, wait here. I got to go ask Joe if it's okay for you to come in. I'm thinking to myself, what the hell? he had to go ask. But if you knew Vince, he was cranky, ornery. But the guy knew so much stuff. He actually accepted me, unbelievably. But he scared the hell out of me, to be honest with you. But
his techniques to this day, I mean, people don't use them because they forget.
Yeah.
You know, there's something finding something new that they forget that, you know. He has one, I think I call him around the world. I don't know what it is, but it's a form of lateral raise. But he had people doing them back in the day. I do them now, and my shoulders are fried. And people look at me like I'm crazy, like I'm doing it wrong.
Yeah.
I'm like, you guys don't understand. This is just something that, you know, it's been around a long time, but it's not wrong, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, Vince was all about – and what I learned from Vince was that it wasn't about lifting – enormous amount of weight. It was about the angle that you put your body at to make that muscle fatigue. That's what I really learned from Vince. And he had so many, I mean, you're right, he had so many weird exercises that I had never seen, you know. Yeah. And I was lucky enough, you know, especially now looking back, I was lucky enough, he took me under his wing, and I swear to God, I thought he hated me the whole time, but he actually liked me. He told me, because, you know, as things go, I kind of like you Portuguese, you call me that. But he took me sort of under his wing, and I'll tell you what, you know, I still incorporate the stuff that he does in my studio in Tulare. I did a kickback raise. It was a tricep kickback with a raise, and you bend over and you put your elbow up. You're all isolated, and it still works. You know, some stuff just always works. That's one of those things. But Vince was quite a pretty amazing guy. I mean, I tried to shoot a video with him, but he was so hard to get along with, and he made it so difficult that we could never put something together, and I wish we would have, you know. When's the last time you were out at in Goals? Was it that last time you and I almost did a YouTube shoot?
Last January. So usually I go to the LA Fit Expo, and while we're at the LA Fit Expo, we go to Goals at least one day to train while we're out there.
Oh yeah.
I mean, the thing is, like, they charge you like $50 to get through the door now for like the day. Like,
it's insane.
And you don't see a lot of the stars there. And usually, like, you see a lot of people from the expo and stuff go, and it gets pretty chaotic because of the expo's in town.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that a few years ago when I went there, maybe 5 years ago or so, it was a different vibe than it is now.
Totally.
People in there training hard before. I go in there now and people are not training hard. There's CrossFit set up in there, and there's a lot of people with their phones filming and stuff like that. And I'm just like looking at it going, listen, this is gold. This is where you used to go to get after it. You know what I mean? This is where you came to level up a notch in your, you know, your bodybuilding career as far as training and learning techniques. And you have like Charles Class training there and all these guys. And, you know, Mr. Olympia trains there. And you're thinking to yourself, like, what the hell happened to this place? Like, it's turned into like a circus now, as opposed to like some place that, you know, used to be the place that you went to, you know, become better yourself, you know?
Yeah, totally agree with you. I mean, I'm still a Gold's Gym member. I go down to L.A., once a month, and I'm always there opening up Gold's Gym with all the other guys that are there early in the morning. I see Charles quite a bit, actually. Yeah. But you're right. I mainly go do cardio occasionally because I do my training during the week, but I still go down there and do cardio. And I was actually floored with the vibe that you're talking about. I go, I can't believe this shit. I mean, you know, this is really not the way it's supposed to be. And you're right about that. It was like everybody's videotaping each other, and I don't know, man. It actually made me sad, to be honest with you, because
we're living a different time now, man. I guess it's everything. I guess it's not just bodybuilding, but like, you know, part of the reason why I kind of got out of bodybuilding and competing and stuff. Number one, my body was breaking down from just banging on it for the last 25 years, but things were just changing. Like everything about it was changing. It wasn't the sport that I knew and kind of grew up in. And the camaraderie was gone. Everybody was trying to compete with each other for better pictures on social media, whatever it was. Yeah. They would hold something against you. You never even met them before.
Yeah.
Whereas back in the day, like, you know, I'd show up at a show, and there might be, you know, 20 guys in your class, and like five of them are friendly with you, and you're hanging out and sitting down, and maybe you forgot your carbs, so they give you some of their rice cakes. It was like different, you know. Now you get there, everybody stays covered up. They look all mean and stuff, and they're eyeballing one another, and I'm like, what the hell's going on?
I know. I know.
It's supposed to be fun. You know, it looks like you guys are trying to, like, gang members, like you're going to get into a fight or something, you know?
That's true. You know, I was able to compete quite for 15 years, you know, but I think my crowning moment for me was when I did a photo shoot at Gold's Gym with Tom Platz, because it was so freaking intimidating in there, you know?
I remember those. I remember Tom with his sleeve rolled up, flexing his triceps. I remember those pictures.
Yeah, and you know something? And Jerry, I tell you what, in all the competitions I did, I felt most proud there because I felt like I belonged halfway there, you know? And yeah. I was there with Tom, and it was just, what an experience. But that was when, I mean, you know, of course, Tom, if you know anything about Tom, I trained with him for a while. He helped me get ready for a show. He took me from regional up to the sort of the world level, if you will, or a higher level, you know. And I was training him for, I said, I'll do whatever you tell me at this point, you know. He scared the hell out of me. I mean, did you ever train with him? Did you ever train with Tom?
I've never worked out with him, but I know, I mean, of course, just from being around long enough, you know how he is. And I've seen him put people through workouts multiple times. There was a woman he recently put through a workout. I think she's a bodybuilder or a physique athlete. And it was just like a set of rows, like cable rows he put her through. And I think he almost killed her. I mean, I thought she was literally going to pop.
Oh.
And it was, she was through the row. And he was like, all right, three more. And then she would barely get that last one. He's like, okay, five more. And then she would probably go, okay, three more. Okay, four more. I was like, what the hell? He probably got 30 extra reps out of this girl she normally wouldn't get.
Yeah.
And by the time it was done, like, she couldn't move. Like, it was just done. She was laying on the floor after one set of cable rows.
Yeah. Well, it was weird because, you know, I caught on to Tom, you know, pretty quickly. You know, he'd go in and he'd say, I don't feel too good today. And then, you know, he'd put 315 on the squat rack and he'd do like 30 reps. I'm like, oh, I see where we're going with this, you know. But talking about that row, you know, I'd been around at this time in a gym for a while now, you know, about 10 years or so. Before I met Tom, or maybe even 12 years. And I'm at Gold's Gym with him, and Tom was very finicky. I mean, he had a bag that had all kinds of stuff in it, you know, and he'd modify benches with, like, little, you know, to create an incline, like an eighth of an inch. It couldn't be any more than that. He was so picky like that. So we're getting ready to do these bent row, not bent row, but the T-bar row. And he said, Leo, I want you to go get a breathing bench.
And I'm thinking, I remember the breathing bench.
Yeah, I'm thinking, what the hell's a breathing? I didn't want to ask, you know. Anyway, so I brought the bench over, and then of course I soon found out what the breathing bench was, because we were sorted out with 75 pounds on the T-bar doing reps of 100 for crazy sakes. I mean, it was, and it just got worse from there. You know, we never got below like 50 reps. We lightened the weight up. Listen, I was sitting on that bench, hunched over, breathing, bleeding out of my hands because of the calluses. And he said, oh, don't worry about it. I have some tape. Tape it up. And it just kept going. I mean, it was like that. I went home over the weekend, and Jerry, when I woke up the next day, I couldn't straighten my arms out. I had to call my wife and said, bring some hot towels because I can't move them. I mean, he was scary to work out with. But
you don't see training like that
anymore.
I watch these new guys, and don't get me wrong, some of them look really good, you know. Yeah. But I kind of take a step back and go, okay, genetics mixed with tons of drugs that they take now—that's
for sure.
And training and weird diets is how they get to where they're being now. But you know, the density, muscularity, the muscle maturity is not there anymore.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, and that comes from, you know, a lot of years of hard training.
That's
necessarily heavy, but like you said, 100 reps, seven, you know, that training long enough is going to give you a specific look that these guys don't have anymore.
I agree.
And I think they don't have the heart for this. They're not in it for the love of it. Like, this past week on Friday, I trained with Jay Cutler. Jay and I have been friends for about 25 years, and we went to train back. He had a show that I was a judge. I'm actually an NPC judge. I was judging his show. And, you know, Jay gets off the plane and stuff, and he calls. He says, hey, man, you know, I got to go train. Jay's retired. Multi-Mr. Olympia, successful. He still makes sure he gets off the plane and trains, and it's for no other reason other than he loves it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and I'm like, I get that. You know, that is really missing nowadays, where these guys, if they go to an expo, they don't train the whole weekend.
Right.
You know, like, if you go to an expo with Jay, he's trained. He does his cardio every morning, no matter how little sleep. There was another, Tanji Johnson. I was at the Arnold one year, and I was on the treadmill, and she walked in and got on the treadmill. She looked like she was going to die. She's like, I literally just took an overnight flight from somewhere in Europe or whatever. She goes, I couldn't sleep on the plane. I landed, threw my stuff in the room, and do my cardio now so I can get my first meal in.
Love it. Yeah.
They love it. They just love doing it. And I'm like, where did the love go?
Yeah.
Now it's turned into not love, but more how can I show on social media how cool I am?
Yeah.
intense I am, you know, what a badass I am. And I'm like, you guys have no clue. Like, Kevin Lavroni is another close friend of mine. And I got to start training with him. He prepped me for shows. And I didn't realize how hard those guys trained until I started training with him.
Yeah.
Put me through the paces. Because he'd be like, okay, this guy can squat 500 pounds. Good, let's put 225 on the bar. And the guy's like, but I can do 500. He goes, good. Let's do five sets of 30.
Yeah.
By the time they get through three sets, the guy can't even stand up. He's throwing up.
Yeah.
You know, and like, he's like, that's how you have to train if you want to get to the next level.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's not there anymore. It's gone.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't understand what happened. Maybe, you know, social media killed it, maybe.
No, I think it did.
You know, people realized, hey, if I do this, I can make a bunch of money like a doctor, but not have to go to school. But I'm like, look, going to school for 10 years to be a doctor and putting 10 years in the gym, I don't see very much difference.
Yeah, really?
You know, with 10 years, you have bled, sweat, teared up. You have thrown up. You have passed out. You have torn things. You have sprained things. You've given up, you know, different social things, lost relationship. I mean, everything has happened in that time if you're going to spend 10 years getting ready to compete, you know. So is it really easier than becoming a doctor? I mean, it's just different in my eyes.
Yeah, I agree. One of the things that I had to figure out, and I know you have, and I want to get into what you're doing with your BIOS training, is that when I first started, I had to come up with a you know, USP, unique selling point. And basically when people come to me today, that I tell them, I said, the thing that makes me unique is the ability to manipulate the, I call it the three components, nutrition, cardio, and weight training to the nth degree, you know. And as a bodybuilder, or, you know, who's been at that high level, we know, as you know, we're like, our body is our lab. We know exactly how to make those macros work, and almost at will. So knowing that is a USP for me. And then these, I had to figure out how to make money in my market, Jerry, because back then, if I was trying to charge even $20 per session and do one-on-one training in Visalia, California in 82, no way that I could have made, you know, it could have been at best a part-time job. And this is where I came up with setting up people in a small group. I call it a micro circuit training. And I figured out a way how to make, even though these people were in a small group, three or four people, I made the program specific. It wasn't one, it wasn't follow the leader. I made it personalized to each person. And I was able to create an energy, and the rest, that's been my whole program in my fitness studio. Okay, it's a little bit different than bodybuilding, but that's how I made my living through that, because I could tap into a bigger universe in my area. My question to you is, tell me what your USP is. How have you've made such an incredible stamp in this industry. What's your USP, your unique selling point? Just for the people out there.
I got to give credit where credit's due. I mean, part of it is your principles. Of course, I worked with Phil Hernon too. And Phil, of course, has very similar principles to the Optimum Training System. He used to be you guys' front man for the company.
Yeah.
But you just said that, you know, the carbs, proteins, and fats. Well, the three inside BIOS 3 training, that's what it is. So I call it the biosynthetic training, meaning the biosynthesis as far as creation of human tissue or living tissue through weight training, cardio, and diet. Now, my thing was, my unique selling point was, I was doing diets for other people's clients because they didn't really understand the diet. But if the other trainer wasn't training them properly, the diet didn't really work. The diet had to work with the training.
Right.
So I stopped doing that completely. And I said, I only do whole programs because the training, cardio, and diet have to work together in synergy.
Yeah.
If they don't support one another, it's not going to work. And what happened was when people heard that, they realized, like, wait a minute, that's why I've just been piecing things together, throwing it, and they're not working. Maybe he's right. Maybe that is how it works. So once they started giving me a chance to see, and of course I had people that I was training, like I had turned pro in the IFBB, pro in the NGA, pro in the Musclemania. I had a lot of bikini girls that were training with me at the time. And that's when people really started going, wait a minute, there's something to the synergy. Now, I kind of learned about synergy through Health for Life. I don't know if you remember them.
I do. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, it was like something, Legendary Abs they had and Maximum. And I learned that by putting certain exercises in certain ways, it causes synergy, right? Because you can use a, you know, pre-exhaust system, you can use a multi-joint, you can use whatever, but all of that stuff is not really going to do much if your diet doesn't support what you're doing in the gym. So I'm like, wait a minute, it's not just synergy with the training. The synergy has to work with, you know, the cardio, it has to work with the diet, even the supplementation, and even if they're taking drugs, all of it has to work together.
Yeah, that's right.
So that was, you know, what I came out with, and I got some resistance at first. You know, people like, I just train, just eat, just this. They try to break it down to like such simple stuff, and I'm like, you guys are not understanding. Like, yeah, you can just eat, but look at the results you got.
Yeah.
I don't want to gain 1 pound in a year. I want to gain 1 pound in a month or 2 weeks. I want faster results. I don't want to wait 10 years. I wanted to get them in 5 years.
Yeah.
So there's an optimal way to train. There's an optimal way to eat while you're training like that. Like, optimal is where it's at. And then what happened was people just kind of were still getting the slow results. They were watching me, and then I started documenting them on YouTube.
Yeah.
When I started documenting myself get ready for a show in like 3 weeks and step on stage and get like second place, they were like, how did he – you know what I mean? They started wondering how it was working, and that's where it started to grow from there.
Yeah, and that's – you know, and then, you know, I've asked myself over the years, and I had another moment. You know, I wonder, okay, am I still relevant? I ask myself those questions every once in a great while. And in this industry, because of what I was seeing on social media, I'm you know, I was watching – I'd go on Google, and I see so much crap on there that these trainers were – they were professing. I'm thinking, this is full of shit. This is not right, you know? So that kind of got me out, and I thought, you know, I'm going to – I did this book. It's just a book of blogs, really, and it's exposing fake trainers. And I got on this rampage. I'm not sure if it was good for me, but the whole idea behind that was just to clean up the stuff that's being misrepresented out there. There's so much garbage out there, and it all came down to what you're saying. So many of these trainers out there, and there's some good ones, but most of them are not, because they don't really understand how to put those three components or what you're talking about together. And you know something? You know as well as I do. You leave one of those out, and you're severely compromising, and most people don't get that. You know, and that's been, you know, so I even, my solution then was, okay, I'm going to develop this health and fitness app. The app that I have developed, it's based on the training that I do in my gym. It's still based on those three components, and I developed this app. And I'll tell you what this app does for a lot of trainers out there. It's a tool, because most of them know, of those three components, most of them seem to have more of a handle on the training, and not all handle, but they have more of it on the training than they do, especially with nutrition. So this app that I'm doing actually fills a gap, because it says, I go to trainers and say, look, I'm not going to compete with you. It's just a way to, if you know more about the training and you need help with cardio, setting up a coherent cardio program and a nutrition program, I just fill those gaps in to help these guys on what they don't know. Because that's where this industry is getting screwed up, is that these people out there, I think it's social media, they know just enough to be dangerous, and they're hurting people, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really irritating. I hate to see it.
A lot of them, these trainers are beginners. Like, they don't really know. You know what I mean? It's like when we first started training, like, you would have to go get your certification, then shadow somebody for a certain period of time to learn different techniques. You might shadow four or five different people where you're not even getting paid. These people, what they do is they go, okay, well, I can make $75 an hour. Like, a doctor makes that. I don't have to go to school.
Yeah.
Okay, they go to their Instagram and they put professional trainer or personal trainer or whatever on it. Contact me for details.
Yeah.
And then they charge $75. And I'm like, that's it? That was your whole qualification was you decided to do it.
Yeah.
And there's really way to check it, you know? So that's where, but you know, and now, like, I don't know if you've noticed this trend now, but I've noticed, like, because I've been doing the YouTube and the social media thing for about 2011 I started. So it's been out there for about 8 years now, and I'm noticing trends. So the big trend was all those people jumping in trying to make money. And what happens is when they start not making the money they thought they were going to, they start dropping off left and right.
Yeah.
And then what happens is, let's say they're not making the money, but their clients are not getting the results. Their clients start dropping off. Then they don't have income.
Right.
So like a lot of them are dropping off left and right because they just can't make it because they obviously didn't know.
Yeah.
And it took a while for people to actually understand they didn't know. But then what happens is those clients start spreading the word on social media really quick that this person doesn't know.
Right.
And it kind of just dissolves what they had tried to build to begin with. So I'm like, it was really bad a couple of years ago, and I've noticed it really curtailing now to where people are at least trying to get like NASM certifications or ISSA. They're trying to get like the bare bones minimum before they get out there and start trying to make money. But I really believe that they don't honestly understand. I mean, they understand training techniques because they'll go online and read them. I mean, we used to read books and stuff in there, but they don't know how to apply them.
Exactly.
They don't know how to apply progressive resistance to something like a force rep. They just know how to do the force rep. So they're just kind of throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks. But at this point, it's starting to decline.
Yeah.
You know, they're realizing it takes more work to be a good trainer than they wanted to put into it. They thought they were going to make easy money like a doctor.
Right.
You know, wound up having to really hustle and bust their ass for it. And then if the client's not getting results, you got to know why. You have to be able to figure that out.
Yeah.
If you can't figure that out, then you're in over your head. And I think now we're starting to see the, you know, it's starting to level out where people are more respecting actual trainers that have been around for a while that have got results and starting to kind of question these new people that pop up.
Yeah, and you know, and the thing about it is that when I was working down, I've been down in the LA area, especially like in the, you know, so many of these trainers are like, they're just, this is something they're doing in between auditions they go on for a movie part. You know, they just fill the gap in, and you know, listen, I'm not against anybody trying to make some money, but it almost makes a mockery out of the people that are out there doing some serious and good work. And you know, you said something that's 100% right. The difference between a great trainer and the others is that the great trainer can tell you how to do something and why, the why of it. And this is what the guys that are fakers out there, they can't tell you the why. They can tell you the how because, yeah, you can figure that stuff out if you go on the internet. And this is where I think the internet sometimes it's kind of hurt us a little bit that way. It's helped, but it also is kind of hurt because, yeah, you read this stuff and you try to go apply it, you know. Yeah. And that's where the real issue is. And you know, and one of the things I've really respected about people in industry, whether it be bodybuilding or a guy like Tiger Woods, anybody that's held longevity, you know, one of the things that you realize that those guys are, you know, they've really figured this thing out and to the point where they do know the why. And they're not sticking around, you know, because all by accident. They've had to figure this stuff out, put the time in, and fail a lot, you know. It takes that. And that's the part that all of a sudden starts making these people weak in the knees, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you have to understand what's going on. Like, we look at Tom Brady as a good example of somebody that evolves.
Yeah.
Right? We've evolved with this stuff, too, right? You know, maybe we figure out a new way to manipulate, you know, certain exercise or whatever, a new angle or something we never thought of or something like that. So you have to be able to adapt, too. But if these people don't really understand how it works, they can't adapt. They can only do what they're shown to do.
Yeah.
As opposed to being like, well, if this works like this, let me just change the angle a little bit. See how that feels, and you're like, wow, that's even better.
Yeah.
Well, they don't even have the ability to do that because they don't understand how it works to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody showed it to them, they can replicate it, but they're not thinking on their own because they don't really understand it.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and I have I've had now this current gym. I had a bunch of gyms years ago, but I have this one left. And I've been out there for about 14, 15 years, and I have trainers come through, and I'll work with them, and you know something, Jerry, most of them don't make it. And I heard a stat on Fox News the other day, and it was a guy that was an entrepreneur and a very successful guy in business, and I didn't know this. He said that 95% of the people that get into the gym business fail, and I believe it based on what I've seen come through and some of the over the 40 years that I've been in, some of the people, most of them fail. They don't make it for all the reasons that you and I have been talking.
I think if you jump into it for money specifically, you're going to fail. Unless you have somebody running, if you're just the investor and you have somebody running the company for you that's been in the gym business or been in the gym and understands it, I think you're going to fail.
Yeah.
There's almost no doubt about it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, when we started, it was like, it wasn't really for the money. It was for the knowledge. It was for the love of it. Now, later on, you could say, like, when I left high school, I went to school at Fort Lauderdale to the Art Institute of Fort Lauderdale. I wanted to be an advertising designer. Like, I did art my whole life. When I got down there, I realized, like, I really just want to be in the gym. So instead of going to class, I would go work out. And they had the Nationals down there in Florida at the time and at the Brown County Convention Center. And I really started realizing, like, well, maybe I can make, you know, like, it wasn't like the first thing I thought of was making money being a bodybuilder or, you know, a trainer. It was like, I just wanted to be in the gym. I was like, well, I can make money being in the gym too. Like, that's where I want to be. But it wasn't like money first. It was like the gym first.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I got to figure out how to make money too, because this is where I want to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I feel like they just go after the money. And they don't really care about all the things that you need to know and understand and be able to evolve with that makes that money in the long run. They just figure they're going to jump in there, and because they got a good smile, people are going to pay them $100 a month to train with them or something.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? They're not in it for the love of it. And they don't really have the knowledge. And at this point, it's not even knowledge. I think at this point in my career, it's wisdom, which is different than knowledge.
Yeah.
You may learn stuff through books, but you wind up, I don't want to say creating things, but knowing why something doesn't work, why something works better, like, you know, stuff that you may not have read, but you learn by experimentation, like that's wisdom. They don't have that wisdom, you know, and I think to be successful, you have to have knowledge and wisdom together.
You know, which brings me to Albert Einstein. You know, one of his quotes is that he said, real knowledge is through experience. And my dad, years ago, Jerry, and I thought, when your dad says stuff to you when you're a young person, you're thinking, yeah, right, whatever. He said, look, son, he said, you can't replace firsthand experience. And I didn't really get that until I've been now around this long. And I thought, you know what? Albert Einstein and my dad were both right. And it really is hard to replace that firsthand experience. And, you know, I've come, I guess, full circle now, Jerry. You know, when I first started in 82, I was like the student bodybuilder. You know, I was hungry and bodybuilding, and I was learning through bodybuilding. And then, you know, as I'm evolving a little bit, then all of a sudden I became a personal trainer where I wanted to share my experiences with that person. And then it was about now, you know, becoming somebody who is putting people into their own business, or I'm myself into my own business and my own gyms, which I still have. And then it was about putting people into their own gyms. And here I am now, back to the top. And I'm still, Jerry, and I'm still hungry, and I want to learn. I'm so enthusiastic about learning new stuff to this day, to go to the gym. And again, I'm, you know, kind of wrapping this thing up, I'm really fortunate, and I tell you what, I'm very, you know, attracted to people like yourself, because I feel you. I know that you're in it for the right reasons, and on top of that, you've made a big splash, man. I'm proud of you, and I'm very thankful and honored that you even thought about buying one of my courses back in the 80s when everybody thought I was a fucking nut, to be honest with you. You know?
First of all, thank you. Like, that's a huge compliment coming from you, because, again, I really looked up to you. And I'll be honest with you, I stayed natural for a long time because I saw that you were doing it natural at that point.
Yeah.
Like, that was a big selling point, that, you know, you weren't on drugs. And I was like, well, if he can do it, then I'm going to do it. You know, yeah. Like, that's just kind of where we went. But it was more about the fact that I understood that there was something out there that I was missing. Right. And I was reading all the magazines, and they had high volume routines and this volume routines and all these different diets. But I'm like, something is missing. Like, I'm not growing the way I should be. And I didn't realize that your programs would be so different.
Yeah.
But it was like, once I bought it, I looked at it and said, like, this is just completely radical. We had the 6-day, twice a day routines in there, the Big Beyond Belief. And I was like, that is a lot of working out. But like, okay, maybe I could do the 4-day one. And I kid you not, the 4-day one, when my training partner and myself, my training partner's name was Donnie Souza. We started training together about 15 years old. By the time we started Big Beyond Belief at about 16, 17 years old, we were already getting bigger than a lot of the teenagers in our area naturally. Like, I had gotten up to 205, 205 pounds naturally using those programs and eating. And people thought we were taking stuff then. When I went on my first steroid cycle, I still used Big Beyond Belief, and I gained 60 pounds in 10 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
I
set you up for that.
Freaked out.
Yeah.
And they were like, what are you doing? And I was like, you know, me and Donnie were like, oh, we're doing this routine. They're like, why are you doing that? Like, that's not going to make you grow. And I'm like, I just gained 60 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, people didn't even believe it after they saw us. They thought we were like showing your routines and doing something secret.
Right,
instead.
Right. Yeah.
And it was like, why? I couldn't wrap my head around why people wouldn't believe it. But when we started the anabolic diet, that really threw a lot of people for a loop. They really were like, you guys are idiots. You're so stupid. Like, we got a lot of that stuff, but we just believed in it because the Big Beyond Belief worked.
Yeah.
So if that worked, like, let's see if the diet works too.
Yeah, why not? It might work, you know, if you just try it. And you know, that was another thing that changed my life forever. And they're so relevant to these days. When I went to Bulgaria, when I saw those guys training 5 times a day, I was up close and personal, man. I saw it all right there. And their ideology and, you know, no stretching. I mean, they said some stuff that was, you talk about radical. You know, but then when I gave myself a chance to try it myself, because I always liked doing it myself first. I mean, I was a big believer, and that's how Bulgarian Burst got started, because I saw them training 5 times a day, and I knew well enough then that, you know, for it to sell and having the average person go in a gym 5 times a day is a stretch, but maybe 3 times, and that's how we started. But man, you know, their principles, and they were so far ahead of everybody. They told me that. They said, look, we're 8 years ahead of the West. And I said, don't you care that I'm going to be copying? I'm telling you, I'm going to copy this, and I'm going to write a book. And they said, we don't care, because by the time you get back, it's going to be old news, you know, that kind of thing. And to this day, I mean, I still use their techniques, and I still abide by them. They work. You know, plain and simple.
Well, they were scientifically sound. They were doing scientific experiments back then that nobody else was doing.
Yeah.
Trying, by scientific experiments, I mean by trial and error. You know, they knew the science behind how the body worked, but they were like, let's try this because this works like this. And
yeah.
I mean, unbelievable. I mean, one of the things that I always took away from Optimal Training Systems, those programs, and I preach it to this day because people don't listen, is how fast a muscle can recover. They don't even understand recovery nowadays anyways. People don't understand what recovery is. They just know muscle growth. But you can get the muscle to recover in about 8 hours fully.
Yeah.
You know, 72 hours is the longest you should wait. And they think I'm absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, what is your nutrition like? Are you able to recover? Like, what is your volume like? What is your intensity like? And they look at me like, no, it takes 72 hours for a muscle to recover. And I'm like, nope. If you look up the science, it goes back, you know, decades.
Yeah.
that's not true. Now, your central nervous system is a different story.
Yeah.
Your central nervous system takes a lot longer, but they look at me like I'm nuts, and I feel so proud that I have that bit of information that I've known for like 30 years that I've been able to apply over and over again. And the fact that I was training every body part 2, 3, 4 times a week, sometimes 5 times a week, proves that, and I wasn't on drugs, that the muscle can recover.
It can.
But they still don't believe it. And I'm like, why? I don't understand. Like, if the proof is in the pudding and you see it, why people just don't believe it? Maybe they're so used to being scammed by stuff and they always think there's an ulterior motive. But bottom line, there's so much information in those books. And I still have the hard copy one, the spiral bound one, that I'll reference it. I reference, as a matter of fact, last week I was doing the Titan training.
Oh, yeah.
I did 3 Titan training last week because I was like, I haven't done it in a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, let me give it a shot again, which, again, I get that book too, the actual books themselves. But yeah, it was groundbreaking stuff you guys came out with. It was way far ahead of its time. And I think today, how things are today, people still don't understand it.
No, they don't. They don't. And, you know, one of the things that you're talking about recovery is the Bulgarians told me, they said, you know, because they trained like 25 to no more than 45 minutes. They said, because of how that changes, you know, with your body and the way it responds to that. But they said, they told me, there's no such thing as overtraining as long as you train about 25 to 35, 40 minutes at the most. You can't overtrain the body. And they said, that's the reason why. And like we said, they told me, they said, if you train like this, in this amount of time, your body can actually recover in 5 hours. I mean, they were training 5 times a day back then, you know, doing 61 rep maxes throughout the day. So they proved that that could work, you know. So it was pretty amazing. But anyway, listen, Jerry, it was really nice you know, having you on the show. I wish you could have seen me like I've been seeing you. Shit. But maybe one day we can do this again. I really thank you for taking the time out. And let's maybe one time. I know we tried to get together in L.A. a while back, and maybe one of these days we can actually meet face-to-face.
I would love that. Thank you so much, man. It was an honor to be on. And I'll be in L.A. again in January. I'm heading out to Olympia. I don't know if you're heading out there, but I would love to link up and just at least shake your hand face-to-face and look in your eye and just say thank you.
Likewise, man. Thank you again, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care, man.
Okay, bye, Jerry.
Bye.